He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Happy birthday, Queen Elizabeth II. She's 89 years old, feisty, still going. I like her style. I do. I think she's a classy dame. She's kept that monarchy going. She had a little slip up when Diana was around. And when Diana died, particularly, I didn't like the way she treated, said she wasn't a royal. But aside from that, she's been an elegant and graceful leader, or nominal leader. Not only of England, but of 16 other nations.
Do you think Prince Charles is wondering when the old bag's going to die so he can take the throne?
I don't know about that. How cruel of you. Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales, I don't know how old he is. He's deep in his 50s now.
I think he's older than that.
I'll look it up. Look it up. But anyway, regardless of Charles' aspirations and the fact that he's been waiting in the wings now for decades, we wish Queen Elizabeth II. She reminds me of my mom. I would love to have my mom, like, hang out with her for a while. 66. Oh, all right. Okay. He's 66. Still waiting for the job. All right. But Prince Charles aside, happy birthday, Queen Elizabeth II. Now hear from our own queen, or at least she was once and wants to be again. He is Queen Hillary.
We came out of the White House not only dead broke, but in debt. We had no money when we got there. And we struggled to, you know, piece together the resources for mortgages, for houses, for Chelsea's education. You know, it was not easy.
Dead broke, she said. I don't know what dead broke means when it comes to the Clintons, but they're certainly rolling in dough now. You could not have missed the fact that all the newspapers filled with the story today, Bill prospering to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, much of it from foreign governments and foreign businesses. At the same time, Hillary was our chief diplomat. So the big issue, the big question of the day, and it is a substantive issue, was it pay to play? I mean, did the foreigners give him cash so she would make favorable judgments about a certain country or a certain business? The other question is whether or not this is a right-wing hit job on the presumptive Democratic candidate.
Do you think Americans are going to understand five times the median income in this country for one speech?
Well, let me put it this way. I thought making speeches for money was a much better thing than getting connected with any one group or company, as so many people who leave public life do.
All right. So she says, rather than remember, I think Ronald Reagan went to Japan, didn't he? I don't know what George W. Bush did. They all, you know, establish their libraries and do such and such for this and that. But those are people who are leaving office. The question is, when she was in office, did her husband prosper? And as a result, did the Clinton family, I mean, how did they amass wealth that's estimated between $100 and $200 million? That according to the New York Post. Now, let's put that aside, though. Because I have a lot of things I want to talk about before we get into that, but I'd be interested in your take on the Clintons and making this money and whether or not you think this is a shady, seedy, dark side of the family. I mean, she right now, the presumptive Democratic candidate, getting chewed up by a lot of Republicans, but I think they may look like yapping little pups. They keep up a tone that's just so critical and harsh and not talk about positive, optimistic agendas for their own policies. But let me put that aside for now. You also have, as that is going on, you have President Obama's approval rating soaring as Governor Christie's approval rating is tanking. His key aide, Senator Joe Carillas, a friend of mine, just jumped ship. He was Christie's key presidential election guy. Senator Carrillo's just jumped ship, and now he's backing Jeb Bush, who I still think is the best and maybe the only Republican who can successfully challenge Madam Secretary. So what do you think about that as well at 10 minutes after, 11 minutes after 10 o'clock? But I have to, you got to give me a minute to talk about something that we probably don't have to deal with in a major way in terms of a conversation. But I just want to let you know what's on my mind this morning concerning these two recent shipwrecks in the Mediterranean that killed, NOM was reporting 800. It's over 800 for one of them, a total in two wrecks, two recent shipwrecks, 1,300 men, women, and children. Now, you know I'm a sailor. You sailed around the world. I have in my mind, you know, when you think about shipwrecks and such, the image of all those terrified people. Just imagine, no life jackets, no safety equipment. The vessel, it collides with another or is swamped, and you have all those terrified people. Just imagine what it was like. I mean, put your head, in that scene just for a second, and just imagine all those men, women, children grabbing, clawing, gouging, fighting each other, parents trying to save their children, the children screaming, the raging sea, everybody's desperately trying to survive. I'm telling you, it sticks with me. It's a haunting, haunting image. It's a nightmare. And, you know, the dead would-be immigrants, they're trying to get from Libya in North Africa to Italy, which, of course, is in the southern part of Europe, the closest part of Europe to North Africa. And you have this severest example, most egregious example of a phenomenon you're seeing in many parts of the world. You're seeing it in Southeast Asia, in Africa. You're seeing the scene in the Mediterranean. You're seeing it in the Pacific. You're seeing it along our own southern border. You have economic and political refugees, asylum seekers, just eager immigrants trying to get into the promised land. Obviously, this country, the other countries, Europe, you know, Italy and Europe, France and Europe, the developed world, Spain, they can't absorb all these tired, poor, huddled masses yearning to breathe free. But you've got to do something about this. You got to, I mean, aside from increasing patrols in the Mediterranean to cut down on the human smuggling, there are things that the civilized world can do in terms of economic development in those impoverished lands. I mean, that's what our concentration should be right here in the new world. But when it comes to Libya, we can help what remains of the government there to suppress the savages of ISIS. ISIS, they have totally disrupted the civic order there. I mean, you have to take responsibility, America. I mean, it was our blundering intervention that unraveled Libya to begin with. We broke it. You know, Colin Powell used to say, you break it, you own it. It's just like you go into a store that sells glass vases. You break them, you own it. President Obama was extremely naive, incompetent almost, if not incompetent for sure, when he allowed himself to be led by the nose, by the French. I was there. He was led, the French and others, they led us into destroying the established order. Now, Gaddafi was an imperfect, undemocratic leader. He was a dictator, but at least he was a leader who renounced nuclear weapons. Remember that. He embraced trade with the West. Importantly, when he was in charge, you didn't have all these migrants dying, trying to escape. Our ambassador and three brave Americans were murdered by ISIS or their evil cousins, Al-Qaeda, these terrorists in Benghazi. It wasn't the Americans. It wasn't Hillary Clinton who murdered them. It was Al-Qaeda and or ISIS in Benghazi. We, the United States, and our nearby European allies have a score to settle there. We have to get the people who got our guys. We have some of them. We haven't gotten all of them. We have an obligation also, and this is much harder, to set that nation straight. We can't let Libya be totally dissolved and filled with anarchy and disorder that leads to these thousands of people trying to flee, fleeing poverty, fleeing disorder, fleeing terrorized for their own lives, dying at sea. I mean, how much longer can we see images of that? How much longer can we see images of that and do nothing about Libya? I think we've got to make a major commitment. The French are doing a pretty good job now in Mali and some of those other countries south of Libya. In Libya itself, with Italian support. For my goodness, the Italians were the colonial leaders there. We've got to establish order in Libya. We've got to crush ISIS. And we've got to get in our heads the notion that our real enemy, the enemy to American interests in the Mideast and elsewhere, is ISIS. It is Sunni Muslim extremist groups, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, Al-Shabaab. How many more do we need before we recognize who the enemy is? Sunni extremists. I see now we've got an aircraft carrier off the coast of Yemen to make sure that the Shiite Iranians don't keep causing trouble there. Yemen's going to be partitioned. Yemen's going to, you know, Yemen's a separate issue. And it's okay we send an aircraft carrier there. But what we need to do is send an aircraft carrier to Libya, straighten that place out, crush ISIS, beheading Christians. My goodness, you see that a couple of days ago? Walking those people along the shoreline in Libya and in Ethiopia, and then cutting their heads off again. I mean, we have to crush ISIS is the enemy. We've got to crush them. We've got to fight back. It's great the economy in the U.S. is thriving, and great that President Obama's polls are ticking up. But now he's got to use some of that newfound approval, that popularity, to say to the American people, we have an obligation in North Africa. We've got to crush these bastards who are not only assassinating Christians, but sending women and children out to die in the ravaging Mediterranean Sea. It's 18 minutes after. We're going to swing back to domestic politics. I'm going to take your calls on Hillary and Bill making the big money and on the race as it is shaping up. 866 Geraldo is the number. 18 minutes after.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
25 minutes after 10 o'clock, I'm going to get to our main topic. Hillary and Bill and the mega bucks that they made when she was secretary and he was going around making speeches that of the 13 Clinton speeches that fetched $500,000 or more, only two of the 13 occurred during the years his wife was not Secretary of State. In other words, 11 of the $500,000 or more speeches happened. I mean, he got paid that kind of money by companies in China, Japan, Canada, Russia, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Cayman Islands, among others. He made 11 of those $500,000 plus speeches as Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. I'm going to get to that, and I'm going to get to your calls, 866-Geraldo. I appreciate them. But I, you know, if you want to ask me anything about Libya, please do. But I have to say, I'm big in Boston. Yesterday was the big, and how did our Matt do?
Matt came in 100 and something. I mean, it was unbelievable.
That's pretty damn good. How many? Yeah. 30,000 raced or something?
30,000 racers, and I think it was 149, something like that.
What's that? What'd you say, Marty? He's going to be with us.
Oh, later. So okay. He can tell you.
All right, he'll tell us himself, but that's great. But Boston's strong. We love Boston. Boston's a great town. I had for many years had a home in Buzzards Bay in Massachusetts. There, I just very close to the college attended by Johar Sarnaev, the now 21-year-old, who as a 19-year-old, under the influence of this domineering brother, did the hideous thing in the Boston Marathon bombing 2 years ago. Now they're contemplating whether or not to put him to death. I'm begging Boston, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't kill to stop someone from killing. It's not that I got the big hang up about the death penalty. It's just that I think that, and I had this argument with my younger brother, Craig. I said that when you were 19, Craig, I could have, convinced you to do anything with me. I was your big older brother, your idol, and all the rest of it. He says, no, I wouldn't have done something so terrible as this. I still say that there are situations where the family dynamic, 19-year-old kid, what do you think about it?
I think that an older brother absolutely could have undue influence on a younger brother, no doubt.
No doubt, and, so you put him in Supermax, six stories underground in Colorado, and let him grow old there. I mean, what's worse punishment than that? You don't have to kill him, and then we're the killers, too. You know what I mean. Don't do it. All right, back to the topic. We're going to get to your calls right now. And star there, our buddy in Forest Hill, Stan's on the line. What's up, Stan? What are you thinking about today?
How are you today, my dear friend? How
are
you?
I'm good. I'm good.
All right. Number one, the man deserves the death penalty. They will give him the death penalty.
I'm not worried about that. Please God, you're wrong, but go ahead.
All right. Number two, Mrs. Clinton should not have to worry about what her husband does. There is no take called pro, as you say. It'll never happen. It's just another crazy issue.
Listen to this, Dan. Stay on the line. Hillary opposed the Colombia free trade deal when running for president in 2008 because of the South American country's poor record on workers' rights. But then the company, Canadian-based Pacific Rubiales, and its founder, Clinton Foundation board member Frank Guisatra, donated millions to the foundation, according to the International Business Times. In 2010, this is 2 years after she opposed the free trade agreement with Colombia, the State Department under Hillary lauded Colombia's human rights record, allowing the company to reap huge profits, according to this this book. The book is called Clinton Cash, The Untold Story of How and Why Foreign Governments and Businesses Help Make Bill and Hillary Rich. Now, admittedly, the book is written by a guy who's on the payroll of the Koch brothers or somebody like that. His name is Schweitzer. Where's his first name? Schweitzer.
Right.
Peter Schweitzer is the author.
Right.
Go ahead, Stan.
Well, if it's true and if that can prove it, then there's something there. Absolutely, go after it. But I doubt there was any.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's good. We'll have doubters and believers. But what's your third point? Can you make it in 10 seconds?
My point is this, and this is the most important. I'm not worried about ISIS. I'm worried about the shadow that's looming over the world, China. They're sitting there waiting to move. They're not in this crisis at all.
All right, you can tell me.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
I make my living off the morning news. Just give me something I can use. People love it when you lose. They love dirty laundry.
Guess who's singing?
I have no idea.
Robin Mee.
Oh, Robin Mee from CNN or HLN.
HLN, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a birthday. But dirty laundry is appropriate. Before I get to your calls, I'm getting there right now. Hillary Clinton is holding 5 fundraisers in 2 days this month, but they'll be low-key events in private homes, and nobody's got a beep with that. The party's hosted by a number of her longtime supporters. The controversy now is the claims in this book, admittedly written by a right-wing guy, funded by one of these shadow billionaires, Peter Schweitzer, his name. But that's not saying that he doesn't have it right. He's claiming in Clinton Cash, the new book, The Untold Story of How and Why Foreign Governments and Businesses Help Make Bill and Hillary Rich, that there was a clear pattern of financial transactions involving the Clintons that occurred contemporaneous with favorable U.S. policy decisions benefiting those providing the funds. That's how the New York Times is reporting it. Here's Susan in Brooklyn. Hey, Susan. Thank you for calling. Hello? Susan, you there? No, Susan. I'll take her on 4. Okay. Hi, Susan. Are you there? Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Hello. Hi. You've been hiding out on me. What's on your mind?
Listen, you know, for those of us who remember the Arkansas days of Bill and Hillary Clinton, they had a lot, you know, with the cattle futures, how she mysteriously made $100,000 in her account, and there was a belief that was a lot of quid pro quo for her to get some position. And Whitewater, wasn't there some real estate deal that was very shady? So there was a pattern of behavior here with the Clintons. And if they're just getting bigger, the stakes are getting bigger. She wants to be president so she can make $500,000 or $600,000 an hour for speeches like her hubby there.
You really think that Hillary is motivated mostly by money?
I think that she has not shown very much in the way of real accomplishments. And the things that she's so passionate about, I haven't seen any great legislation that's helped women or poor children or all these things that she claims to be so passionate about. I just see a lot of her, and I don't see how she protected the poor ambassadors in Benghazi. So if she's in charge of national security, they begged for more security. She was Secretary of State. So I don't think we can trust her with our national security or budget.
Oh, so Susan, let me ask you a question. When you speak with other women, do you get a vibe that is like yours, very negative about Hillary? Or is it like my family, where you have, and my daughters, my wife, everybody saying, you know, you're picking on this woman who's so accomplished and a great role model? I mean, what kind of pressure do you get when you speak out against Hillary?
Listen, women need to hold other women accountable to the same standards they would men. Otherwise, they're being kind of sexist. You get it?
I appreciate you talking over each other, but I appreciate the call. Thanks, Susan. Here's Paul. Thanks for your patience in Queens. What's up, man?
Hey, Araldo. What I want to mention quick is, I'm listening, you're good and all, but we got to put the vernacular where it is. When Iraq was attacked, you put the blame on Bush and Cheney. Let's talk where it is. This Libyan situation is Obama and his trifecta of women. Susan Power, Jared, and Hillary Clinton. They're the ones who led Gaddafi get slaughtered in the street, ripped apart. They're the ones who picked the leaders that have no option, the reason why we had four people dead in Libya. So let's put the square where the blame is.
I agree that this is the biggest failing. All right, hold on. I believe that this is the biggest failing of the Obama administration, and during the time particularly Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. How they let the Mideast unravel purely because they were naive about how in this wonderful Arab Spring, democracy was going to bud and flourish. I mean, totally rejecting the historic experience of this region where democracy has been, rare if it existed at all. Paul, anything else to add there, buddy? All right, you snooze, you lose. All right, Dan in New Jersey, what's on your mind, Dan?
Yes. Hello, good morning. Two things, quickly. We don't need 6 or 8 more years of this Clinton. Everything with the Clintons is whatever charge is brought against them, they don't deny it, they don't refute it, they only attack the accuser. We don't need this again. And another thing, when I see her rollout, my belief is that she has absolutely zero respect for the intelligence of the people she expects to vote for her.
Say why.
Why? Because all I hear is from her supporters that she's a woman. So everything comes because she's a woman. When Bill was accused of sexual abuse of women, it was a right-wing conspiracy. Everything is attack the accuser. No one holds her accountable. No one's gone back to her. I don't see the press going back to her on Benghazi, asking her about the guy who was arrested. Should he still be in jail for making the video? Has that been disputed yet? No one attacked. No one questions her. We don't need 6 or 8 more years of this morally corrupt, ethically corrupt environment.
Have you heard about Jeb Bush, my man's problems with all of his previous business dealings? Are we going to apply the same, harsh scrutiny to Jeb and the guys, Dan?
Apply the same scrutiny to everybody. And I object to you saying to the guys, is that an implication that you think, will you say this because she's a woman? Let her stand up and take the heat.
All right, buddy. All right. Well said there. Well said there, Dan. In Pennsylvania, Bob's on the line. What do you think, Bob?
Good morning. I just have a quick thing. Maybe you'd sound off on it. I wonder how much of the money that's being donated to the Clinton Foundation actually began its journey as foreign aid from the U.S.
Whoa, that's one. I haven't read the book yet. I don't know if they make that allegation. So you're saying
that
we gave them the money that they gave to the Clintons? I don't know how you. I'm just looking at the way the New York Times summarizes it and how people summarize the New York Times reporting about the book Clinton Cash. I don't see anything where the money came from government aid kind of groups back to the Clintons. He got $1 million from a Canadian bank, a major shareholder in the Keystone Pipeline, just as the State Department was considering the project. So that's a big business, a Canadian bank. I don't see anywhere where they say he pilfered. I think that's a little harsh. I don't think that happened. But there are real questions. I mean, that's the problem when you have a foundation. The foundation making all this money. I don't know if this money is going into their own personal bank account or foundation. What does the Clinton Foundation do exactly? Do you know?
Well, they're involved in all of this, bringing world leaders together and promising, climate, to work on climate change. They get them to, big spenders to spend money on. I go through the whole host of things, but I know climate change was one of their big ones, where they have this yearly convention. The convention.
But
they
is
have
this
here in New
is
York.
This like the Gates Foundation, where they say they're going to say eradicate malaria, and they pay to kill mosquitoes? Do they do that kind of real hands-on stuff, or is it mostly intellectual? Do you know, or you want to look it up?
I'm going to tell you in a second.
Okay. In the meantime, Selma in Queens, what's up?
Yeah, Harold. The bottom line of the story is that when the Clinton was in fact the president, his wife went forward to to ratify the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. She would have the United Nations personnel control children in the United States. We did not vote on. There were only two countries that did not vote on that: Iraq and the United States. Our children right now are so out of control because of the laws implemented by politicians. And Miss Clinton, Mrs. Clinton, would give our rights as parents away to the UN.
All right, Selma, thank you. Got it. I saw the. You see the funny a bumper sticker, the first bumper sticker for Hillary. Vote for Monica Lewinsky's ex-boyfriend's wife. harsh stuff.
That is harsh.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
53 minutes after 10 o'clock. So in the commercial break, Noam did a little research about the Clinton Foundation. What is it exactly that they do with all the money they raise? We know there are other foundations that are hands-on. I mentioned Gates and how he and his wife want to eradicate malaria and improve education for youngsters throughout the world. They do a lot of hands-on stuff that apparently makes a difference. Noam, in terms of the Clinton Foundation, what'd you find?
Well, they do a lot, actually. So what they do is they hold these annual conventions every year at the same time as the United Nations General Assembly. So they get leaders from around the world to show up, and they'll pick a topic or a few topics during the course of this week-long convention where these world leaders commit to getting rid of or taking on some sort of project. So I'll give you one example. In 2010, it was a reading, girls learning to read around the world. About 10 nations signed on to this. Bangladesh, Cambodia, India, Laos, Nepal, South Africa, and go on. And the program was funded privately, $91 million, some of it coming from Goldman Sachs, some of it coming from Barclays Bank, some others. And the program has really worked. They've been able to get books, teaching supplies, teachers out to these areas where girls aren't normally able to get an education.
So you're not in the tank for the Clintons, are you?
No, I mean,
what kind of pressure has your wife put on you?
On Clinton, it's funny. I would have said 4 years ago, I would have said she would have been all over Hillary. Not so much this time around.
So who would she be contemplating?
I don't know. She's the actual voter that both the Republicans and Democrats want. She's dead in the middle there.
Has she ever voted Republican?
She has.
I think that the Republicans can win, but I had this debate with O'Reilly on Friday night. Right now what you have is people attacking Hillary, which is fine, and she's so easily attackable. Even though, as we noted yesterday, only 7% of commentators are Republicans like me. So the vast majority of them are progressives or liberals, know-it-alls. And they are basically in the tank for the Clintons. That's the allegation over where I work at Fox News anyway, that she can do no wrong. And yet, yeah, the New York Times is leading the way in this reporting about this book. And the worry is that the stories about the book aren't looking behind the author and who's funding him, this book about Clinton Cash, but that there'll be a series of attacks and that the attacks will come and go and there'll be no agenda. I really believe that if the Republicans stick to attacking Hillary, stick to trying to stiffen abortion laws across the country, anti-abortion laws across the country, fail to modify their harsh stance on immigration and the, you know, their adamant opposition to the Obama executive orders cutting some slack to long-term immigrants who've been here without committing crimes, who have citizen children, you know, and who, you know, have under Obama's initial order been given a no deportation kind of pass. The Republicans objected to that. A Republican federal judge has stopped it in Texas. But anyway, if they stick to that and the opposition to gay marriage, and that's going to be their agenda, and Benghazi, you know, I don't see the Republicans winning, particularly in light of what's happening with the American economy. Now, it may be that you are, when you're listening to me, I see the phones are lighting up. I like that, 866-HERALDO. If you're in a tough spot right now, I feel sorry for you, and everybody does, but the economy itself is improving, and 52% of Americans surveyed feel the economy is doing well, or at least a lot better than it has been. So if the economy is really humming along, and all the Republicans have are attacks on Hillary and moves against your private life, then I think they're going to end up holding their wands in their hands there come next November. We'll be right back.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Don't cry.
Patti LuPone's birthday, when she did Evita, oh my God. I fell in love with Evita / Patti. It was overwhelming. I mean, it was so emotional, so passionate.
I heard you actually really did fall in love with... Did that happen? Yeah, I mean, I read that somewhere, that there was some sort of tour d'affaire between the two of you.
You have a dirty mind.
That's not true?
Dirty mind.
You're not going to tell me, are you?
Dirty mind. But it was a fabulous period. What a great star she is. Great star she is, Patti LuPone. Wonderful. She does cabaret now. She does Broadway. But when she was Evita.
But did she do Geraldo? That's the real question we're asking.
When she was Evita, she really was Evita. She rekindled the love that everybody had for, you know, that legendary figure who lives on. I mean, Madonna's movie was okay. But it didn't come close to Patti LuPone. When she did Evita on Broadway for the first time, that was a major star. And she conjured up the memory, I guess, is it Andrew Lloyd Webber? Who was it?
Sounds like that'd be right, yeah.
Check that, Marty. I don't want to give the wrong this, but that was Evita. So here's the question. I'm going to get to the main topic. Topic is Hillary and politics and money. But here's the situation. You're driving your car. The cop sees you with a violation of some sort. Let's say the violation is something wrong with your car, like the car without the traffic light. So the cop pulls you over. He stops you. Is it legal for the cop then to prolong the traffic stop so he can now check out your car for drugs, for example? So he prolongs the traffic stop. He calls to get the drug sniffing dog on scene. 20 minutes later, the team shows up. Your traffic stop's now 20 minutes long. Drug sniffing dog sniffs your car, finds that you have dope in your car, and you get busted for dope. Is it constitutional to prolong the traffic stop without a search warrant, remember, to then bring in assets to check you out if they find drugs, arrest you for the drugs? Constitutional or unconstitutional?
I would say it's probably unconstitutional.
The Supreme Court, you're a very wise man, has just ruled 6-3 in favor of a driver found to have meth in his car. Danny Rodriguez, his name, issued a warning for driving. He was driving on the shoulder of the highway, of the Nebraska highway. Then he was made to wait 10 minutes for the dog, the drug sniffing dog. The dog alerted. The guy was busted for the dope. Supreme Court said you can't do it. You could hold him for the stop itself. That's it. You can't then make a whole big kazurai out of it. What was interesting is that you had the you know, the four liberals on the court voting that way. But you also had two conservatives joining them. A lot of conservatives. What's his name? Sam Alito voted against. Anyway, what's his name? Why can't I remember the Italian great judge? What's his name? Scalia. All right, thank you. God, I had a brain fart there. He voted with Justice Bader Ginsburg, who is the most liberal member of the court. So anyway, it's not constitutional. So why did they go off on that? What I really want to talk about is Hillary. What I really want to talk about is money. And here is Elena. Are you there, Elena? Thank you for holding on in New Jersey. What's up?
Hi, Geraldo. Well, the one thing that infuriates me is that it just seems to be we're getting candidates out there that seem to fall into what it's called a default candidate. Oh, she's a woman. They're going to, assuming they're getting so many votes. You had Obama. They assumed how many votes that they were going to get there. People have to go back to thinking, what is the candidate for? It's to take this country to the next step to protect it and not to serve these people's ego. Hillary wants to be president for her ego, not to worry about this country. And everything that she's done hasn't been any type of accomplishment. What brings me back to is when she was running in 08 for the Democratic
nomination. Yep.
Nomination. They had the commercial at 3 o'clock. Who, you know, she was going to get this call. Who was going to get the call at 3 o'clock? She got the
right
call at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and nothing happened.
You're talking about Benghazi.
Yeah, Benghazi. And to me, that is a very poignant part of our history, that we abandoned a civil servant, an American servant working foreign service, and one of the most dangerous places, that we didn't provide additional security. We didn't send the help that they needed. How do we expect her to come up and step up? Meanwhile, she's got her hands dirty from what it looks like. And you know what? I don't put it past them with all these governments, you know, funneling money to her, to the Clinton Foundation. It's just, to me, it's just so blatant, and they seem to be blatant in everything that they do, her and her husband, that, you know, anybody who votes for her should be ashamed of herself, because, you know, looking at, you know, maybe the economy is doing great for some people, but I'm going to tell you, I see a lot of things every day. People are struggling. People are at their wit's end. Depending on how old you are, you're basically screwed and running for the hills. And, you know,
Elena, let me ask you something about, you sound very pessimistic about life generally. What's the matter? What's going on?
Because you know what? I see, for example, I deal in a business that deals with people's financial issues, home issues. You know, you open up the Monday newspaper in our county, we have 13 pages of foreclosures. 13, it went up from 4, you know, and it's for people that walk in the high times or whatever, people that have been in their houses, and now because of different financial situations, it's gotten worse. You know, the underlying problems are still there. And using the stock market, you're saying the economy is good. I know how many people over 50, no jobs. They can't get a job. They get a part-time job making $10 an hour at the time that they should be making the most money before they retire. I mean.
All right, Elena, I got it. I got you a very downer there. I may have to go back to drinking. I stayed sober yesterday to dry out, but that a very, very melancholy view of everything. Jim, how do you see life, man?
Geraldo, you're the greatest, man.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
These Republicans get pounding on the Benghazi, Jeremiah Wright, small little stuff. They will never, ever win the presidency again. I mean, they just talk now. What happened when we lost 4,000 or 5,000 people for war that was made up and all that stuff? Was she coming and talking about this stuff? No. I mean, we have to get to the core to the problems. Economy, jobs, taxes. That's what we need, you know?
All right. I got you, Jim. I appreciate the call. You know, it is interesting. I mean, the Iraq War is what he alludes to there. 4,000 or 5,000 died in Iraq, and most people say unnecessarily, what the hell were we ever in Iraq for? Which leads me, you know, and I went on that whole Iraq bandwagon. I mean, I don't know if, what were you saying about the war? Were you opposing the drum beats? Were you old enough? 2003?
Sure I was. Yeah, I think I was.
You working in radio in 2003?
I was, yeah.
And did you have a commentary? And what was your angle?
In 2003, I was in Charleston, South Carolina,
uh-huh,
with my own morning radio show. And yeah, I might have been, I was definitely in the minority down in Charleston, South Carolina.
And so you were saying, let's not do this.
I didn't believe what I was hearing, and I realized that I was in the minority. Now it makes me look like I knew what I was really talking about, but it was just a guess on my part that it didn't all sort of add up to me at the time.
But what about what I'm saying right now about Libya? The fact that we have to do something to bring some order, first of all, to wreak more revenge against the factions that killed our ambassador, and you know, we've arrested a couple of the people with brilliant snatch and grabs. You have a country now that's totally going to hell in a handbasket. If nobody's in charge, what's going to happen? I mean, you're just going to have, next week, you'll have another 500 in some leaky boat that trying to get away.
Sure.
Or you'll have another 100 Christians killed on the beach in front of all of us in those orange jumpsuits. I mean, it just, even saying that, I have to tell you, Noam, I get this feeling in my bones. I want to grab them. I mean, these ISIS dogs, I want to grab them. I want to shake them. I want to hurt them. I just think that you can't lose sight of the, and I think we're being totally distracted with our foreign policy now with Iran and all this and Israel and the nukes and all this stuff. That's for tomorrow. Right today, you've got ISIS slaughtering people and recruiting our Americans. What do you get? Six more young adults from Minneapolis.
Yeah.
They just busted them, Somalian immigrants trying to get to ISIS or to Al-Shabaab we got some real situations that we have to deal with, and I think we got to deal with them vigorously. And, the world's not kumbaya, and I want that aircraft carrier off the coast of Libya, and I want it flying missions, and I want it blowing up some of these militias, and I want it supporting some of the good guys. There are good guys in Libya. And I want us all to understand that the Sunni Muslim extremist movement is the existential threat that everybody's been waiting for. It's not about Iran and nukes. You think Iran's going to use nukes, that the Persian Empire from 5,000 years is going to destroy the world? I don't buy that. So let's say we'll make this deal. Let's make this deal. You relieve the embargo, and if they cheat, we slap it back on them, and that's Iran. The big deal, though, is the world is going to hell in a handbasket. We are dissolving. The order of things is dissolving. You have all of these tribal crazy people with new age weapons. They're going to screw stuff up. Even as all these people, these innocent try to flee and die. All right, please be patient with me. I'm coming back to your calls. I've got to take a quick intermission.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. 26 minutes after 11 o'clock here at 77 WABC. This is your Election Central. Nobody, no station in this city, in this metro area, will have better coverage of the local and national races than we shall right here at 77 WABC. Today we're talking about the story du jour is Hillary and Bill. Where'd they get all the money from? They're worth between $100 and $200 million. They were, in Hillary's words, flat broke when they left office. So a lot has transpired in the last, 15 years since Bill Clinton. Is it 15 years? Yeah, 15 years. 2000. I was president. So, I put it in that context. 100 million, maybe not so much over 15 years. That's divided up. What's that? Seven, eight, $9-10 million a year.
Right, but the accusation in this book is that the bulk of that money, or the most of it, was made during the years that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State.
2008 until just last year.
That's what's problematic.
That is
potentially problematic.
If it is only problematic if it was pay to play. Okay, Peter. Peter, we'll start with Peter in New York. Thank you for your calls, folks. We'll get to everybody. What's up, Peter?
Good morning. Good morning. Great show today, as always.
Thank you. Appreciate you listening.
And just as a side note, I have this feeling that the real reason Hillary's running is so she told Bill after the whole Monica situation, if you don't want to be humiliated in public, you make sure I'm the first woman in the White House.
So you think it's that's the quid? You know, Bill, I won't kill you in your sleep, but you've got to back me for president.
That's, I mean, think about it.
All I know is if it were me, you remember I got my tooth knocked out. My ex whacked me, and
you had it coming.
I had it coming. Totally, I totally deserved it. She should have done that to him. It would have been funny to see him with a black eye. All right, Peter, make your main point.
Well, it seems to be that somebody who has never lived in New York runs for senator, becomes a senator. Somebody who's never had any previous direction or aspiration towards a position as the White House all of a sudden wants to be in there in 2008. Really, really ugly campaign against a person in the same party, in the Democrat Party. Not very pretty what went on between the two of them, between her and Obama. Now all of a sudden she gets picked to be his Secretary of State.
Well, maybe he just thought that she was the most competent person. And for a time, we all thought that. Remember how active she was. She was flying everywhere. She was having women's forums and educating female children and a lot of good things. I don't want us to overlook that fact. And then she was on this victory tour when Benghazi happened. And then you look back and you say, well, maybe she should have paid more attention. She didn't need to travel as much as she did. She should have read the intelligence reports. It is clear in Benghazi that they were unprepared for these militia, the ISIS and Al-Qaeda type violence. They were totally unprepared. It's also clear, I think, that the Obama administration spun the story of Benghazi in the aftermath. I just think Republicans really undermine their entire argument, though, when they say falsely that the military could have done something to save the people once the battle began. That's been totally rebutted. And the more any Republican focuses on that, the more weak the argument about Benghazi becomes. All right, if I didn't get to your call, I will get to your call. Please be patient. 866-HERALDO.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-HERALDO. 77 WABC.
I used to live on the sixth floor of a Central Park West park-facing apartment, and you used to watch the trees, and I always thought you could do a whole book just on the difference in the trees right outside my own window. And I feel the same way about looking up at the Empire State Building. Remember yesterday, you couldn't see it at all.
No.
Day before, it was half shrouded in clouds. Now it's standing so tall and the sun falling on it. Such a beautiful spring. So far, I have to say, as awful as spring has been, I mean, winter was here, this spring has been pretty pleasant in terms of the temperatures now, 50s, 60s, even touching 70s, lots of sunshine. Got the boat out, you know, really, it makes me optimistic. I'm going to get back to the topic and everything else that's going on. You know, the real life Scandal. You ever see Scandal, the show?
Yeah, sure.
So this is, she's got the goods and her husband, the president. So he has to make her an ambassador or something. Right. Otherwise, she's going to, you know, it's the Hillary Bill story. But remember, they had that Upper East Side new condo. And they had the luxury river-facing units in the condo. And then they had, they saved 55 of the street-facing units in the same building. But those people had to enter through a so-called poor door. Remember that?
It was Upper West Side, yeah.
Upper West Side, right. For people earning 60% or less of the median income. So you had 55 street-facing units, and people had to go through the poor door. Guess how many people applied for those 55 rental units?
5,000.
88,000.
Come on.
88,000. Oh, I'm reading right here in New York Magazine. Terrific. New York Magazine, by the way, I think that
last couple of years, they've really done a good job with that, bringing back its gusto.
Okay, but back to the topic du jour, back to the real life scandal. We're going to start with Frankie in Brooklyn. Hey, Frankie, thank you very much for calling.
Hey, how are you today, Geraldo?
Pretty good, man. Feeling good, sunshine.
Hey, okay, so we'll get right to the point. What I want to say, I find you're a very compassionate man, although I don't believe in everything that you do. But anyway, my question is, what if Hillary was a man? What if she was a man from, let's say, Whitewater to now? How many times would she have been locked up?
It's an interesting question. I can't answer it, but obviously... Noam Frankie believes that she's being cut a lot of slack because she's a woman. I don't know. She's didn't she graduate from Yale? And she's a terrific lawyer, right? She's a lawyer. She's been engaged in government. I don't know if she's ever worked, but she was a pretty good senator here. I don't remember.
She was a lawyer, obviously, before that.
I don't remember her being a bad senator. I don't remember much about her Senate tenure. I don't know if she accomplished anything particularly.
She was involved with a lot of children health initiatives that actually passed here in New York that made things better for poor kids anyway.
Well, when she was first lady, I mean, she tried and failed to get Hillary care. We now have Obamacare. I don't know how they particularly compare one to the other, Obamacare to Hillary care. But if the essence of it is that people who otherwise could not afford health insurance or who were for any reason uninsured, if they got insured as a result, then I'm for it. I think Obamacare, you notice you don't hear much about Obamacare now. You don't, you know, for all the 75 votes or however many votes there have been about repealing Obamacare, it's not in the front burner, it seems to me, in terms of what the Republicans are talking about. I really think that Obama's big weakness and the weakness of the Democrats is that we've let the world go to hell. I think that's the big weakness, because domestically, I mean, I flash back. I mean, I'm an investor. I flash back to 2008 and the fact that I had lost half my wealth in a couple of weeks. And that, and to come back from the worst recession ever. I think that Republicans have to find a way to take some credit for that. You know, whether it was, Hank Paulson or, you know, he's got a new book out, the former, what was his job? Anyway.
Fed chairman.
Was he Fed chairman? No, he wasn't Fed chairman.
Treasury chair.
It was Treasury chair. That's what he was. A Treasury secretary.
Treasury secretary.
We got it finally. God, I don't know what it is. It's still, we used to be so smart.
You know, anyway. And you remember also 2008, how high the unemployment rate is. I mean, a lot of things
that's
that
awful.
You would run
double
on.
Digits.
Yeah,
double
now
digits.
What it was last one, 5.1%.
Gregory in Rosedale, what's up, man?
This is what's up. I listened to you a long time, and lately, you're just a constant apologist for everything Democrat, everything liberal.
I just criticized Obama in the terms of his world. Well, we'll get to the point.
My comment, okay?
All right, let's
and
listen.
And then all of a sudden, you're sitting there today, and you're saying that Hillary did this, Hillary did that. Hillary's done nothing. Look at his Senate career. She did nothing as far as legislation goes. She introduced zero, okay?
I don't know that to be a fact, but I certainly understand that you don't like her, and that's good. That's good. I know a lot of people don't like her. Here in Wilkes Valley is Charles on the phone. What's up, Charles?
Yes, I just want to say that the characteristics of a presidential candidate have deteriorated significantly since the beginning of the 1800s until now. If the people, the quality of people that run for office nowadays were the ones in power during the establishment of this country, the country never would have happened, period.
Well, that may be, but I don't know why you are down, for instance, on Jeb Bush. What's wrong with Jeb Bush?
What's wrong with my next-door neighbor?
I don't know your next-door neighbor. What about
Jeb
Scott
Bush
Walker?
Well,
he's running a good government in Wisconsin.
Rich people are cool, so that's what it comes to, you know.
You think it's all about that? You think that both sides care about the rich and everyone else?
Degenerate always helps get a presidential candidate for the Democrats.
Okay, got it. Here's James. What's up, James?
Yes, Geraldo, you were talking about the gentleman in Nebraska.
Right, and the illegal stop where they held him on a traffic stop and then really they sent for the drug dogs and they found meth in his car and they charged him with the meth. The Supreme Court just said that was illegal or unconstitutional.
I don't know about the driving rules in Nebraska, but if you're driving on the side of the road, wouldn't you think you're on drugs to begin with?
The Supreme Court, it's interesting that you say that, and it's very wise observation. Why? Because the court said, now, if you have some other reason to suspect dope, for instance, you stop the guy, he opens the window, and the Cheech and Chong cloud comes puffing out, that's different. If you have some other legitimate reason, but you just can't do it based on, you know, the, you know, just the suspicion that you just, you can't do it just because you feel that the guy's hinking and you want to check stuff out. If you have no objective reason, I mean, obviously if he's stoned, he's stoned. That's a good reason. But, you just can't do it willy nilly. Remember when, Sharpton and all the guys were marching on the Jersey Turnpike? Because the state troopers in Jersey were stopping like every other black guy that was driving up or down, particularly the young kids commuting from colleges in like Atlanta and down there, Baltimore, and then coming up here, coming home. The state troopers were stopping, and they stopped that because it was racial profiling. This is an extension, it seems to me, of that, the laws against racial profiling. You can't just profile someone and then hold them for 20 minutes, even 10 minutes on a traffic stop, when all you need is a couple of minutes to write the citation up and let them go on their way. If there's some reason, you can apply to a judge for a search warrant. Or if you smell dope, that's different. Hey, Mario in East Rutherford, right? What's up? You know, do you really live in East Rutherford? I think that, are there really houses there?
Pardon me?
You know, where do you live? Are you in the shadow of the big stadium?
No, that's my place of business. I'm right behind Giant Stadium.
Oh, you are? So what are they going to do with that big lemon of a shopping center on the ugly thing on the turnpike there?
It's being held up by a guy by the name of Chris Christie. And I can't even get into it. I'm going to tell you what it is. It's total graft and corruption. And again, I said to Noam that I'm a Tea Party NRA conservative, but I will tell you this. The reason why that thing isn't getting off the ground is very simple. The three owners, the Giants, the Jets, Woody Johnson, the Tishes, and the other gentleman there, the Maris, they want a big on the build for the parking on a Sunday because they're worried that there'll be a Jet game and a Giant game, there won't be enough road. So when they put it up and we paid for it, they got a 20-year tax abatement, and the rest of the businesses in the area had to kick in the money.
Let me ask you this, Mario, is that whole thing empty? What's inside that thing?
Nothing. It's zero. Okay. It's an empty. It's a true testimony to government that can do nothing other than start wars and collect taxes.
You know, something? I think that you're a brilliant call, and I appreciate it. You know, yesterday I was driving home. I went to Edgewater. So I wanted to try a different way. I usually go up the West Side Highway and take the George Washington Bridge, and, you know, my house is right under the bridge, so it's easy. But there was some trucks and stuff, and the entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel, your route, you take right. The tunnel, right, is right here. It's right on 33rd Street, so it was easy. I dumped in there. And I came out and I said, you know what? Rather than take the River Road with all the traffic lights, I'm going to take the turnpike. So remember, it was rainy and foggy?
Yeah.
I got so screwed up. Somehow I got south on the turnpike. So I went.
Well, because you didn't go on the extension. You have to get on the turnpike extension.
I don't know. I ended up at exit 15W. Then I put the navigation on, so it tells me to go these different ways. I almost got killed following the navigation in the fog and the rain. So I got lost again, then it put me back in the Lincoln Tunnel coming back to New York. I felt like such a rookie. I mean, I lived here my whole life, and I couldn't find my way home.
Exit 15, that's like south of Orange.
It took me an hour to get home. It was a 15-minute commute. But the thing is, I had to pass that thing.
It's so ugly.
I passed it two times, and it's so gigantic. First of all, the architect should kill himself.
Yeah.
Because it's the ugliest building ever created.
Well, you know, part of it was supposed to be a ski slope. It was going to be an indoor ski slope. So if you see, there's like one building that sort of faces downwards. And it goes back to the Jim McGreevy administration. I mean, the corruption started way back then. And for some reason, nobody can seem to put it together and get it right over
there. Marty had a great idea. Let's give it to Donald Trump. Who could fix it but Trump? Trump could take that thing. He could make it happen. And, you know, it's not his state, but my goodness, he operates everywhere. I think we should do that. We should campaign. I mean, that thing is so ugly. And what the caller just said, Mario, I think his name, what he just said, you can look at that building and that is Chris Christie's legacy right now. That is the metaphor for the Christie administration in New Jersey. It now he's at 38%. And when you look at that and look at the fact that whatever the egos were, maybe it is, as the caller suggests, the sports franchises and their power, they are stopping it for their own selfish reasons. Okay, that's definitely part of it, reports Noam Layden. Okay, but to see that thing rotting and all that money, what are the $2 billion or something like that?
I don't know. It's some astronomical amount.
To see it going for nothing. And all the jobs it could provide, I mean, to get that thing filled and get action in there and get retail happening and indoor golf and indoor skiing. And if the, you know, you really need a leader with vision, a selfless, put aside ego and get that thing going. We should make that a campaign, because that, I think, is the ugliest building within 50 miles of the Empire State Building, at least, if not in the country. And it's right on the turnpike. And remember how people used to associate New Jersey with the oil terminal in Elizabeth?
Sure.
I mean, that was New Jersey. You know, at what exit are you from? And then you come into New York, you pass that polluted, you know, they've cleaned that up somewhat. But now I think it's this pink elephant, this gigantic building that is there representing government and selfishness at their absolute egregious worst.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Okay, welcome back. Just a minute to go. The Boston Marathon yesterday, those skinny African people, I don't know, they must have some kind of advantage. They clearly dominated. But our own skinny white guy, Matt, the genius, Matt Dahl, how'd you do, Matt?
I did pretty well, Geraldo. Thanks for having me on. I went to Boston with every intention of running the best race of my life, and that's exactly what I did. 2:37:03.
Wow. Amazing. 2 hours, 37 minutes, 3 microseconds. Matt Dahl. So how'd you feel running?
I felt great. It was a blast. The city of Boston stepped up. They lived up to the hype, man. It was a lot of fun.
And the emotion?
A lot of emotion. You can't hold back, but that's part of it.
A few years ago, that time would have been winning time. Congratulations, Matt.